Hello friends, and thank you for joining me for the Way Forward podcast, brought to you by me, Fliss Goldsmith, and Co-Design Coaching, where we create your optimal life together. Hello everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. It's so good to be back with you again. I hope life is treating you really, really well. And if for any reason it isn't, I hope that today we can find a way forward for you and create something really supportive. So what are we talking about today? Well, we are talking about the universally difficult subject of shame. And I know that shame is a word that creates a really physical response in people. It certainly does in me. It's that knot in the pit of your stomach. And everyone will be able to recall a time in their life, an incident where they felt shame or they were ashamed, and probably quite vividly. I know that if I think on shame, I can almost picture it as if I was there right now in my mind. It's really, really clear. And as I'll go on to explain, there's a very good reason for all of that. Shame is one of the major, major emotions, and it kind of connects to a lot of other areas of our lives, which is why we find it so difficult to get underneath shame, to root it out, and to be able to move forward with our lives. So today, I hope that we can find that way for you and enable you to rewrite your own shame stories. I always like to start off with a definition, because then we're all on the same page, if you like. So in really simple terms, I like to think of shame in the way that it speaks to the I am bad, okay? Now, that's very different from guilt, because guilt says, I did something bad, you know, whereas shame is about the person. It is about you. It is about a character flaw. So it says to you that you are bad. So it's not focused on the behavior, like doing something bad, which you might feel guilty about. It's talking about you as an inherent person. And that's why it cuts so, so deep. So when we feel that shame, wherever it comes from, which we'll get onto example shortly, this leads us to a feeling of being unworthy. And when we feel unworthy, we feel that we are unworthy in all ways. So we're unworthy of love, we're unworthy of connection, we're unworthy of belonging. And love, connection, belonging, they are all essential human functions. Without those, we don't have a life. And so that is why it's so distressing to our brain when we experience shame. And that's why, as I was saying, those memories that you have of times you felt shame are so clear, because it's almost a trauma to the brain when it experiences shame. So when we feel unworthy, that sends our mind and our emotions into a spiral where we feel that we deserve the bad things that happen. Okay, so we deserve bad things. I am an awful person, so I deserve terrible things to happen to me. Of course, I should not get that promotion. Of course, I should drop my shopping on the way home because I am an awful person. And that is a very easy spiral to slip down. And a little side note, actually, just segueing a little bit. But if you think about when bad things happen, if we feel we don't deserve the bad things happen, but we still get that painful reaction, that's actually humiliation. But that's just a little emotional coach side note for you there. But yeah, when we get that pain and we feel we deserve the bad things, that's because we're suffering from the concept of shame. And it is viscerally painful. You know, for you, it might show up in different areas. It might not be that pit of your stomach knot or like you've swallowed a pile of bricks. For some people, it's almost like the blood draining out of them or a cold shiver down their spine. But there is something very physical and very powerful in our experience of shame. Now, the author of Finding Fish, Antoine Quentin Fisher, describes this so, so cleverly, I think. And he says that shame hurts so badly that he'd rather pick being physically beaten than to feel shame. And I think that is a really, really useful way of looking at it. That shame hurts so badly that we might actually prefer to be physically beaten than to feel that shame. What is shame based on then? How does it take hold? It must have its roots in something, something to thrive in, something to grow from, as all emotions do. Well, shame quite cleverly likes to base itself in that fear of disconnection. So it's ironic, really, because shame leads us to feel disconnected. But the fear of being disconnected is actually what allows it to thrive. It is what allows it to take hold of us and overshadow our lives, which is really bittersweet. And the reason that the fear of disconnection is so terrifying to us as humans is, as I said, connection is a prerequisite for being human. We all need some level of connection. And it's the idea that who we are makes us unworthy of the connection. And if we don't connect with people, then we can't belong. And if we can't belong, then we are at the mercy of all those isolated feelings that come: anxiety, depression, loneliness. All of those things start to eat away at us because we're frightened that we won't be worthy, we won't be loved, we won't be connected, and therefore we just quite simply do not belong. So that's where shame has its roots. But what does it need to thrive? Okay, so it's got its roots in this fear of being disconnected, this unworthiness of anybody loving us, connecting to us, or allowing us to belong. But a bit like a flower, or maybe a weed in this case, I don't know how you want to think of it. If it's going to grow, if shame is going to take over, it's going to need some things to keep it growing. And that's true. It needs three things, actually. It needs silence, it needs secrecy, and it needs judgment. Okay. Silence, secrecy, and judgment. So if you have something that you feel ashamed of, or that gives you that sense of shame, if you do not speak shame, if you do not tell anybody about that circumstance, you have kept it secret. You have silenced it by not admitting it to yourself and not sharing it with anybody else. And if you share it with the wrong person, somebody who cannot sit with you and explore that in a safe space, then you will throw it open to judgment. Judgment can come from yourself as well, but it can also come from sharing it with the wrong people. And once you pour that silence, that secrecy, and that judgment on shame, it will grow exponentially. And the sad reality is that every time after that that you experience shame and you repeat those three factors that it needs to thrive, it will grow faster and faster and faster and more wide-reaching, affecting every part of your life, from your relationships to your work to your family, friends, social lives, interests, mental health, physical health. All of these things can be negatively impacted by shame. Now, I have got a little bit of good news. Because there is an antidote to shame. It is not impossible to get over shame, and it is not impossible to throw the light on it and stop it from thriving. And the antidote is quite eloquently simple, but much harder to actually achieve, and that is empathy. If you pour empathy upon shame, it will wither and it will die. And that, my friends, is exactly what we are looking for here. So if you can harness empathy and pour that on your shameful situation, it will die. So empathy comes usually externally, but it can come internally. And if we look at the internal form of empathy, that is really self-compassion. So that is you being really kind to yourself and looking at the way you talk to yourself with your internal monologue, prioritizing your health and well-being. And actually, I did do a previous podcast episode on this, on self-compassion, and I'll pop the link in the show notes because you might want to go back and listen to that, because it can really help with this part of the shame journey. But when we're looking at empathy from an outside source, from an external point of view, it comes from somebody who is able to sit with us, feel with us, and not judge us. And that sounds really easy, but there are plenty of people out there who claim to be empathetic, but they will sit and they will feel for you. And they might be trying to be empathetic, but what they're actually doing there is practicing empathy without boundaries. And empathy without boundaries is dangerous because they will start to absorb your problems and then become wallowing in them themselves, which is not helpful to them, and it certainly isn't helpful to you. So you need to find a connection, a friend, a family member, a coach, a therapist, anybody who you trust to hold a safe space for you, to feel with you, to listen to you, and not to cast any judgment in meeting you exactly where you are at. If you can do that, then you will have achieved empathy. And whatever you share, no matter how awful it seems to you, no matter how viscerally painful it is, that shame, once spoken, once shared, once held in empathy, it will absolutely disappear. And the feeling of relief is absolutely glorious and so, so immense. Shame, you see, is... it's a social emotion. It can't be healed in isolation. We could do all of this work by ourselves and still not fully have moved through that shame journey, because it's a social emotion. You need to involve other people. So before I go into sharing my own example of shame, I want to look at why we've got societally into such a pickle with shame. Why have we ended up here with something that is an emotion and allowed ourselves to be so governed by it? Well, it all comes down really to a misuse of language and a misunderstanding. Think on this for a minute. If somebody does something self-serving or brash, I don't know, let's say like somebody gets drunk at a wedding and ruins the speech by taking centre stage, the likelihood is that afterwards, somebody, in a gossipy fashion, will say, "Oh, they were utterly shameless." And I'm just sort of thinking, hold on, what? So we're saying that somebody who acted with poor choices and awful behaviour is shameless. So the cure for that then would be tons and tons of shame. No, that is completely and utterly the reverse. In fact, it's having the tons and tons of shame in their life that usually drives this selfish, egotistical, and sometimes even narcissistic behaviour. What somebody acting like that needs is accountability. They're not shameless. They have shame and they need accountability, because if you give them more shame, all they're going to do is discharge their pain in more and more damaging ways and find another enemy to blame. It might not be you next time, but it will be somebody. So where there is shame, empathy is absent, because as you remember, I said that empathy cures shame. So if someone is filled with shame, then there is no empathy in their life and they can't hope to heal. So when we called that wedding crasher shameless, what we actually mean is that poor person is empathyless. And that doesn't mean that you can't be really, really pissed off that they crashed into the wedding speech. You know, that you are allowed your emotions, but they have no empathy in their life, because if they did, they would not be eaten up with shame and they would not be discharging their pain in this disruptive way. So I just think that's a really interesting point to consider, so that we've got the right language. Because when we can name and identify things correctly, that's when we start to understand our emotions, and that's when we start to really, really heal. So empathy is an outward emotion, and it draws us to the situation of someone else. And our only real thought when we're being truly empathetic is to help that other person. And we don't make it about ourselves, unless, the only caveat being, if we use an experience of our own to support them in their difficulty. But you see, shame's the opposite. Shame's an inward emotion where we only focus on how we feel. We're unable to think about anybody else unless it pertains to our perception of how they might be judging us. So that is why shame and empathy are total opposites. One is absolutely outward and selfless, and the other is very internal, and selfish. And that's not because somebody with shame is a bad person. It's because they are in so much pain. So I'm going to give you my example now of shame, so that you've got something to really hang all of these bits of information on. And obviously, all of your own shame journeys or stories are going to be different. And what I really want is for you to be able to take parts of this podcast that you can put into practice and help you to feel better about yourself ultimately. So I will, of course, be giving you some tips and ideas to take away. When I was in my late teens and early 20s, I suffered with two eating disorders, anorexia nervosa and bulimia. And in the very beginning of that, I was convinced it was because I hated the way my body looked, which is quite frankly nonsensical when I look back, because I was a very athletic, very healthy, very fit young woman. And in time, I started to think maybe it wasn't about the way I felt about my body. It was more about a control thing. But actually, what I realized into my late 20s and where the healing began to happen was that my eating disorders were both rooted in shame. You see, I think I got to that point because I felt that I was never enough, that I needed to try harder. So I needed to exercise more and I needed to eat less, or I needed to prove myself or punish myself by eating more. And all of those things were very damaging. They damaged me physically, they damaged me mentally, and they damaged me emotionally. And every single one of those things was rooted in shame. I was ashamed of myself for not being enough. I was ashamed that I wasn't the best at something, even though that something was so, so damaging. I was ashamed that I couldn't outrun somebody. I was ashamed that I couldn't go into a shop and buy the smallest of dress sizes. And this came, I think, from a place in my childhood where going further, harder, being the best, outlasting people was seen as something worthy of reward. So that my worth was absolutely connected to my effort. And if I did not put in 100%, 100% of the time, I was unworthy. And if I was unworthy, I was unloved, I did not belong, I had no connection. And that is what allowed me to go down the route of those two eating disorders. And of course, because I felt so ashamed, I kept them secret. I didn't tell anyone. No, I was fine, absolutely fine, thank you very much. No, there's nothing wrong with me, absolutely not. I was silent. I never even reflected on it myself. I did not open my mouth about it. I didn't go online about it. And I didn't open myself up to any kind of empathy. There was a heck of a lot of judgment, actually. Well-meaning judgment. I think people were terrified for me. But there was a lot of judgment. And so, of course, my shame bloomed. It was right at home in that murky, dark, secretive, lonely, self-sabotaging space. And that is why it lasted for the length of time it did. I mean, we're talking the best part of a decade. 10 years is a long time to be in a pit of shame and suffering. But by doing the work on my emotional and mental well-being, I was able to come to the other side of it and live a much happier, freer, accepting, compassionate, and loving life, not only for myself, but for the other people I was surrounded in. And I know that whatever your shame is, this can be true for you as well. So I just want to leave you with four simple things that you can try to do in your own life so that you can unpick some of your feelings of shame and start to positively impact and improve all the areas of your life where shame has so unjustly sucked the life out of you for so long. So number one, I want you to think about the acronym RUN, R-U-N. Recognize, understand, and name. So recognize what is causing the shame. Understand that. Where has it come from? Is it something that came from your childhood? Is it something that's been said to you? Is it a story you're telling yourself? And out that for the mistruth that it is. And name it. Say exactly what it is. Be as specific as possible. Being general will only go so far. So name your shame triggers. Is that connected to your parents? Is it connected to your friends? Is it about being unworthy? Is it about being unlovable? Is it about being disconnected? Is it about being lazy? Exactly what is it that triggers off that shame in you? The second step is to identify the external factors that lead to shame. Is it certain situations that bring on that shame? Is it when you're surrounded by certain people or you go to a certain place? Is it a particular time of year that triggers that feeling of shame, an anniversary of some kind? Because when you get really specific on the triggers, then you can start to make extra dot connecting moments. And it's not to say you have to avoid those people or those places, but once you know that this is what's coming, you know to do more of this shame unpicking work. And therefore, you're better armed to respond to it with love and kindness, compassion, and actually empathy for anyone else going through that situation, as well as your own self-compassion. Number three is make those empathetic connections. Find that friend, find that coach, that therapist, whoever it may be, that you know 100% can hold a safe space for you to explore your shame, will meet you where you are with judgment and guide you to where you need to be. They're going to listen to you. You will be able to speak. You will not have to stay silent anymore. And you will be able to share what is a very human condition, shame. There's no shame in shame. Let me just put that out there. It's something we will all experience. I cannot stop it ever happening to you. I wish I could. All I can do is give you the antidote to when it does happen. And the final thing, and I really want to underline this, is break that silence and that secrecy. Even if you can't at the beginning say it out loud, go online. Go to a forum that might support people with whatever difficulties you're having, challenges, conditions. Write a letter to somebody. Write a letter to yourself. Do a piece of art that represents it. Do anything that breaks the secret and then share it with somebody. Take tiny steps. I know that you're not just going to leap out of bed tomorrow and start confessing your shame to the world, because if it was that easy, we wouldn't be having this conversation to start with. But I also know that by taking these tiny little steps, which we call behavioral activations, it will put you in the direction of travel where you will be able to meet your shame and to root it out and to stop it from growing any further and to actually ceasing that particular shame to exist at all. And if I had told you at the beginning of this podcast episode that we could reach a place where you could take a particular shame and reduce it so that it did not exist at all, you wouldn't have believed me. But I hope now that I've walked you through that sequence that you can see exactly how that can happen with some very specific steps that you are more than capable, my friend, of taking. You might not feel it, you might not believe it, but I know you are. Just follow those steps, keep doing the little things, and you will be able to live a much happier, connected, loving life that spreads out to everybody else who's in your sphere of being. So I really hope that that has shone a little light on shame. There's much more to talk about, but that is for another episode. And remember, if you're ready to really, really prioritize your emotional and mental well-being and getting some empowerment in there, just head over to codesignwithfliss.com, which is my website where there's lots of information on all of the services that I offer. And if you just want a chat or to put a question to me, then you can catch me on my email, which is hello@flissgoldsmith.com, or I'm on my socials at Instagram and Facebook, which is at codesignwithfliss. All right, my loves, I'm going to leave you for now to let that absorb in, because now we know more about shame and now we know the way forward. Hello friends, and thank you for joining me for the Way Forward podcast, brought to you by me, Fliss Goldsmith, and Co-Design Coaching, where we create your optimal life together.